The idea that our universe and our world may be an ever-evolving, ever-changing, living field of energy, and that we communicate with that energy is gaining greater acceptance from an increasingly wider audience. Physicist John Wheeler was a colleague of Albert Einstein. He's alive today. He had an illness in the year 2002 and granted a series of interviews after recovering from his illness. And it was interesting, as I was reading the interviews, what he was saying was that his illness was what he considered to be a wake-up call. And he said for the remainder of his life, he was going to dedicate his life to solve what he considered to be the last great mystery. He said, I want to understand who we are, and I want to understand what the role of consciousness is and what consciousness plays in the universe. And I remember thinking as I read these, nothing like saving the easy problems for the last. Well, John Wheeler, in the interview, when he was asked to describe how he saw our role in the universe, he answered the question this way. He said, we're part of a universe that is a work in progress. He said, the universe isn't complete. It's not finished building itself yet. He goes on to say that we're tiny patches of the universe looking at itself and building itself along the way. What he's saying is that we'll never find the end of creation, for example, because every place we look, creation puts something there for us to see. The act of looking is consciousness building and creating. Well, John Wheeler's ideas add to a growing body of evidence suggesting that the universe may not exist quite the way we've always thought that it exists. For example, recent studies now through the Hubble telescope and studies that NASA has done over the last 10 years are offering a surprising body of evidence suggesting, number one, that the universe, in fact, isn't very solid. The new studies are showing that only about 4% of our entire universe is made of the stuff that we call atoms. Only 4% is physical. The other 96% is made of an energy that we do not really even understand well at all. It's called dark energy, dark matter. 73% of our universe, for example, is believed to be a dark energy, and of that, 23% a dark matter, and this is not matter as we know it. Well, of the 4% that is physical, of the 4% of our universe that is made of atoms, most of that is made of only four elements, and they're four very familiar elements. They should be familiar to you now from our last segment. They are the elements of hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon. The same four elements that make up our bodies and make up life as we know it. So when John Wheeler says that we're part of a universe building itself, he's implying that something within us, a force of some kind, is interacting with the very fabric of creation, in some way influencing the energy that leads to building those atoms. Well, that force, we now know, is linked to human emotion. Perhaps one of the best examples of the studies that have revealed this link between human emotion and the energy around us was that of Dr. Vladimir Popanin, the Russian quantum biologist from Russia's Academy of Sciences that was on loan to the United States in the early 1990s. He'd begun a series of studies in Moscow, and he completed them with the HeartMath Institute here in the United States. He was investigating the effects of human DNA upon matter. And what the research found, the summary of this research that was described in more detail in the program Speaking the Lost Language of God, the summary simply said, number one, that a previously unrecognized form of energy exists around us. This is the field of energy we spoke of previously, the mind of God. And number two is that emotion affects the DNA in our bodies, and the DNA communicates with the stuff that this field is made of. From Dr. Popanin's lab notes, he said, we're forced to accept the possibility that a new field of energy is excited by the DNA, and this is called the DNA phantom effect. If you'd like to find out more about this, you can do a keyword search on DNA phantom effect for the details on this kind of study. Well, it is from these kinds of studies and additional evidence that link us to the web of life that are showing that this web surrounds us in ways that we may not always expect. On a very practical level, what these experiments are showing us is that when we change within our bodies, the change is mirrored in the world around us. For example, researchers have found that when stress is relieved within a group in a building, the effects are registered beyond the walls of the building into the communities surrounding the group. The statistics are showing now that a threshold number of people in a given population is all that it takes to trigger the effects of peace, for example, by experiencing peace as a powerful, intentional emotion from within. In the very well-publicized project, the International Peace Project in the Middle East, published in the Journal of Conflict Resolution, December 1988, these relationships were actually implemented during the Israeli-Lebanese conflict when people that were trained to feel peace in their bodies were strategically placed throughout the areas of conflict in the Israeli-Lebanese areas for a period of time. It was called the window of the experiment. And during that window, what was recorded was that terrorist activities dropped to zero, crimes against people declined, emergency hospital room visits declined, and when the people stopped feeling peace in their bodies, all of those statistics reversed. The number required to bring this result about, the number of people, was actually a very small number. It was the square root of 1% of the given population. So if you'd like to apply this in your own lives, if you take a given population of a room or a community or a nation or a world and take the square root of that number, what you'll find is a very small number of people are required to jumpstart these effects that begin within our hearts and in our prayers and meditations. In a city of 1 million people, for example, the number is only about 100. In a world of 6 billion people, the number is only about 8,000. So we know that this relationship exists between what is happening inside of our bodies and how it affects the world around us. While the thinking has been that there is a lag time between the time we create the emotion inside of our bodies and when that emotion is reflected in our surroundings, new experiments now are showing a very compelling body of evidence that the feedback may be much quicker than anyone had previously imagined. One of the places where this kind of evidence is showing up is an amazing series of experiments involving human emotion and droplets of water. What we know is that our world is mostly water. Water is 95% of a fertilized human embryo. 70% of your body is made of water. 70% of the Earth's surface is water. Well, in 1994, studies performed by Dr. Lee H. Lorenzen and Masaru Emoto began exposing droplets of water to subtle energy, the energy of words that were written, the energy of feelings that were created inside of the body. So the words actually were written and taped onto vials of very specific kinds of water, and the emotions were both spoken and felt at the same time. The water was frozen to preserve whatever pattern the emotions had placed into the water, and individual droplets were then photographed under magnification between 200 and 500 times. Amazing results were discovered because what they found was that the water actually changed its properties. It changed the physical properties, the structural properties of the crystals changed in the presence of human emotion. By 1999, over 10,000 photographs of these water crystals had been produced for study. So among these, for example, some of the most polluted water from one of the major dams in Japan was taken. The droplet was taken from behind the water. And in the presence of words such as the word demon, D-E-M-O-N, the water appeared very amorphous. It was dark. It was dirty. There was no well-defined crystal structure. It didn't really look like any crystal that you would expect to see. The same droplet of water, and this is key, the same droplet, however, when exposed to the word soul, which has a more powerful life-affirming connotation, the water began to change, and the crystalline structure changed. It went from being amorphous and brown and dirty looking to the beginnings of a crystalline structure, and the clarity became greater. The geometry was more pronounced. The same thing happens when a droplet of water is exposed to a word with a negative connotation like the word devil, D-E-V-I-L. very amorphous, non-crystalline, dark, gloomy-looking droplet of water, the same droplet of water exposed to the word angel begins to grow small, well-defined crystals. The color begins to change. The clarity begins to change. The structure of the water crystals change in the presence of the subtle energy of the word and the way that the word is being expressed. Now, obviously, this kind of research is very, very controversial because of the implications. If, in fact, we have 50 trillion cells in every human body and every one of those cells is a droplet of water, what are the implications in terms of the way we feel in our lives and the way the water droplets of our body are responding to what we feel? One of the experiments that was done was some of the most contaminated water from the Fujiwara Dam in Japan were brought into the laboratory, and in 1 hour, after 1 hour of prayer from one of the local monks, the water changed completely. The crystalline structure was well-defined, well-formed. The geometry looked almost perfect. The water went from being murky and amorphous to very clear, very, very beautiful structure. After 1 hour, among some of the most extraordinary results shown with the experiments, the relationship between water and emotion were some of the most unexpected. For example, when a couple who are truly deeply in love, not superficially in love, deeply in love with one another, found themselves in the presence of the water and the water was responding to their emotion, it would produce crystals rather than single crystals. They were two interlocking crystals mirroring, in some respects, the relationship between these two people. Perhaps one of the most amazing was the example of a single droplet of water forming a single large crystal with a smaller, perfectly formed crystal inside. It looked a little different from the crystals that had been seen previously, and it was only upon further investigation that researchers found that one of the women who was in the presence of the crystal actually had conceived and was not even aware that she was pregnant on the one hand, while on the other hand, the water in its way was mirroring one crystal inside of another as the two forms of life coming together. Obviously, the work is very controversial, and just as obviously, it appears that the correlations are high enough that these relationships warrant further investigation. So when we find these kinds of relationships happening, they add to the growing body of evidence that the ancients left us as what they call the great spiritual mystery. The great spiritual mystery simply says this. It says that something that we do within our lives triggers a process within our bodies, and that process interacts with the forces of creation beyond our bodies and affects our physical world. And it is our physical world, then, that is mirroring back to us what it is that we've done in our bodies, and our mystery comes full circle. So let me say this again. Something that we do within our bodies triggers a process within our bodies that interacts with the forces of creation and affects our physical world. And as we see our world affected, we're seeing the result of what we change in our bodies. Scientific experiments are showing precisely the same thing. They use different language. What they're saying is that heart-based feeling and emotion changes the chemistry of our bodies, producing quantum effects that extend beyond our bodies that change our physical world. And by virtue of that, the world is mirroring to us the changes that we have felt from within. If we understand this, we have the beginnings of a very empowering internal technology. It's us speaking to the mind of God, and life is the feedback mechanism that mirrors the silent language of God back to us once again. Well, this feedback mechanism works because of a very powerful principle called resonance. Resonance. We are in resonance with our world. We're tuned to the world around us in ways that we are perhaps only beginning to understand. You can think of it like this. Just as a radio or a television station may broadcast its signals throughout the airwaves and have them reflected by satellite dishes miles away, we do the same thing. We broadcast our thoughts, feelings, emotions, our beliefs, our bias, our judgments in every moment of life. The field is the antenna that reflects these patterns back to us as relationships in our lives. The difference is, however, that instead of having only one satellite dish receiving and broadcasting the signal back to the sender, the entire field, our universe, is the receiver, and it's broadcasting to us all the time, everywhere, reflecting us back to ourselves as the situations and the circumstances and the relationships that we bring into our lives. It's a very, very empowering way, very different way to think about our world. But the mirrors of this field run much deeper than simply human-to-human relationships. I'd like to share some examples. We are tuned to everything in our world, not just one another. We're tuned to our homes. We're tuned to our automobiles, to our pets, to our bodies. We know this, and sometimes we're reminded in ways that seem almost silly. On the one hand, anecdotal ways that, on the other hand, can't be explained away. When I think about this, I always think of my 1987 Pontiac 6000. Had over 300,000 miles on it, and it ran perfectly for me. It looked like a new car inside and under the hood. I took really good care of it. However, whenever I would loan my 300,000-plus mile vehicle to someone else, inevitably, they would have problems that I would never have. And we used to laugh and joke about it. We'd say, well, the car's not used to another person, it's used to me. And in this way, we were actually acknowledging this relationship, this resonance. So at this point in our program, I think it might be useful to share some actual examples describing how these mirrors of life work in general before we delve into the specifics of how they work in the relationships with other people. So in the first example, I'd like to share a true story, a true account of a client that I was working with in the early 1990s. I found myself doing some general counseling in the Bay Area, and I had a client that came to me on Thursday evenings. Every Thursday night, we started just about the same. I'd ask about her life and what was happening, and this particular evening, something was a little different. She came in. She was obviously very agitated. I asked her, I said, what's happened in this last week? What's happened in your life? And she began describing what she called her never-ending date. She had been in a relationship with a man for 11 years. They never married. They worked together. They lived together. They shared their life goals and their dreams together. They couldn't seem to move forward in their relationship as marriage, and they also seemed that they couldn't end the relationship and each move on in their respective ways. They found themselves locked into what she called, again, this never-ending date. On this particular night, I asked her how her never-ending date was going, and she answered by saying, my life is terrible, she said. And she began explaining weird things that happened during the last week, things that seemed to have no rhyme or reason in their lives. She said, my partner and I were sitting on the couch watching television one evening, and all of a sudden, we heard this tremendous crash under the vanity of the bathroom sink. And we went to investigate, and what we found is that the water pipe had broken and the pressure had literally ripped the door off the vanity and blown it into the sheetrock across the room on the other side of the bathroom. And at the same time, they had heard a noise in their garage, and when they went and investigated in the garage, they found that their hot water heater had exploded and there was hot water all over the floor in the garage. I said, wow, this is amazing. I said, well, what did you do? And she says, well, I'm not finished yet. She said, the next morning, we got into the car to go to the hardware store to buy a new hot water heater, and as we pulled out of the driveway, the radiator hose broke in our car, and we had hot radiator fluid all over the driveway. And I said, this is absolutely amazing. And I said, I'd like for you to stop right there and tell me, what is happening in your personal life? How would you characterize your never-ending date right now? And before I even got the sentence out, she said, the tension in our house is almost unbearable. Her next sentence told the story. In her next sentence, she says, our lives feel to me like a pressure cooker. And then she stopped and she looked at me. And she said, you don't suppose that what's happening in our lives have anything to do with what's happening in our house? And I said, in my understanding, it has everything to do with what's happening in your house because you are in tune with your home. Your home is mirroring to you the pressure that you're feeling in your personal life. Well, this is one kind of example, one kind of story. Maybe you've had similar things happen in your life. And the next story I'd like to share is a very personal story. It's a true account of a life-saving example of how recognizing the resonance in the world around us saved the life of someone that's very close to me. In my mom's life, next to her two sons, her very best friend is her 12-pound border terrier. Her name is Cory Sue. And although I am on the road traveling for my work quite a bit, I do my best to call mom about once a week from wherever I am to check in, say hello, ask her what's happening in her life, and share with her what's happening in mine. Well, it was just before my 2000 book tour. I had called mom and asked how she was doing, and she began to tell me about her little dog, Cory. She said that she hadn't been acting herself, and mom was very concerned. She hadn't been eating well, and she'd taken her to the veterinarian for a physical. And as part of the physical, the veterinarian had done a series of x-rays. The x-rays came back, and they showed areas of black spots on Cory's lungs. Her little dog had areas of black spots for some unexplained reason on her lungs. And we were having this conversation. I'm listening to my mother share the story with me, and while she's obviously concerned for her pet, I was very concerned for another reason. So I began to share with mom the principle of resonance and how we are tuned to our world and our homes and our automobiles and our pets. And I offered a number of case histories to her and described how these things actually play about in our lives, and numerous case histories of animals taking on the conditions of their owners, the medical conditions of their owners, sometimes weeks or even months before the owner's bodies ever show the same conditions. And I sensed that what I was hearing on the phone and that Cory's condition may be one of those instances. Well, the following week, mom scheduled a physical of her own after some prodding that included her own lung x-rays with her doctor. Although she was experiencing no symptoms of any problems, there was no reason to go to the doctor. She agreed to go because of the conversations that we were having, and to her surprise, her x-rays revealed a suspicious spot on her lung. And after further investigation, the diagnosis was confirmed that she had a scar tissue from an illness earlier in life, and that that scar tissue had in fact become cancerous. 3 weeks later, mom underwent surgery, and the lower one-third of her right lung was completely removed. And I spoke with the doctor in the recovery room after the surgery. He reiterated how lucky my mom was that we caught this mass early, especially in light of the fact that there was no telltale symptoms to alert us to any problems. She wasn't having any problems. And I'm sharing this story with you because we had learned, mom and I had learned how to read what life was showing us in the moment, and we trusted it enough to apply it in our own lives in a practical way. Mom recovered. She's doing well. She's with us today. And interestingly, Cory's condition that triggered us investigating further into what might be happening seems to have dissipated altogether as well. It's not caused her any problems. So both mom and Cory are happy. I asked their permission. They were happy for me to share this story with you, if it can help someone else learn from their experiences as well. So these are just a couple of examples of how resonance works in our world as well as in our relationships. And from the perspective of resonance, our lives then may be viewed as tuned patterns of energy, mirroring other tuned patterns of energy. So the smoothness or the lack thereof of our mechanical, our electrical, our shared life realities mirror the patterns of their owners. And one of these fails, it might be the signal to look a little closer at what's failed. I'm going to invite you to try an experiment. Look into your own life. Look to your world at things that frequently break down or seem to malfunction in some way, and then do these three things. Number one, when you look at something that's broken, determine the role that that broken part plays in the system. So for example, if your brakes are going out in your car, or your transmission in your car, your hot water heater in your house, what is the role, the general role that that part plays in the car or in the house? Number two, use that role as a metaphor for your life. If the brakes are going out in your car, what is it about your life that seems to be going so fast that you need to put those brakes on or apply those brakes to? If you are finding, for example, the story that I shared, the hot water heater blowing up, the pipes blowing up, the radiator hose blowing up, mirroring a pressure in your home or in your automobile, if that pressure is there, Where in your life do you find a similar pressure, and what is your life showing to you? Number three, ask yourself what the metaphor means to you in this moment. What is the metaphor communicating to you? You might be surprised to see how accurately the world around you is communicating to you concepts and ideas, experiences and feelings, some conscious, perhaps some not, that are living within you in this very moment. Well, these are huge concepts, and I acknowledge that. The implications are vast. I also acknowledge this is a very, very different way of looking at life. It's also very empowering. If we can read the signals from the world around us in response to what we've lived, then we have opened the door to a new way of communicating with ourselves and understanding ourselves. If we can recognize the language of the world around us and see life as a language communicating to us, mirroring to us the things, spoken or unspoken, that we've become in our world, then we've opened the door to vast new possibilities of empowering ourselves, becoming better people, and creating a better world. In the next section, we'll begin to explore the specific mirrors now of relationship, those that were left to us in 2,500-year-old texts by the ancient Essenes and the Gnostics that followed them. We'll explore what these mirrors are, how to recognize them, what they're saying to us in our lives, from our careers and our families and our friendships to our personal relationships and our health. Through these mirrors, we learn to hear the silent language of God.